Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we also shine a light ahead of us onto the path where evolution is taking us. The purpose of our Wiki Politiki radio podcast is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, and solve problems together rather than defending positions. Our guest this week is a leader in the clean, healthy, and natural food movement, a movement that has the potential to help us rise above identity issues and focus on identical issues, the identical issues we all face: clean food, clean water, clean air, and clean government. His name is Ocean Robbins, and if that name sounds familiar, I mean the Robbins part, not the ocean, his grandfather, Irv Robbins, co-founded the Baskin-Robbins Ice Cream Company. His dad, John Robbins, said no to the family business and became an advocate for humane treatment of animals and for veganism, writing the best-selling book, Diet for a New America. Ocean has been an activist, an organizer, and an entrepreneur since he was a child, and has founded the Food Revolution Summit to help all of us make healthier choices and also to educate us about how to find foods that are chemical-free and pesticide-free. Welcome, Ocean.
Well, thrilled to be with you, Steve.
Thanks. I'm just curious, what was it like as a kid having the name Ocean?
Well, you know, I had a few kids in school that used to ask if they could swim in me and make jokes like that. But, you know, I had fun with it because, you know, there were plenty of Johns and Waynes, and no offense, but there were plenty of Steves in my school. But there was only one Ocean. And, you know, I think we're all unique. As I've gotten a little older, I think it's a giveaway as to the generation my parents come from. And, you know, but I appreciate how the inspiration I draw from the name Ocean, because, you know, the ocean's pretty vast and it's pretty powerful. And there's a lot of room in the name like that for being wild and crazy and peaceful and serene and everything in between.
Well, you're running with a vast crowd, I'll tell you that. So good for you. Now, of course, you grew up in a family. We'll talk more about that later, about your family. But first, let's get right to the Food Revolution Summit. We're just about here in, as we come into the last week of April here, we're just about to begin that and get that started. Tell us a bit about why and how the Food Revolution Summit got started.
Sure. Well, for a little family background, as you know, my grandfather founded an ice cream company, Baskin-Robbins. My dad, John, grew up with an ice cream cone-shaped swimming pool in the backyard and 31 flavors of ice cream in the freezer. And he was groomed to one day join in running the family company. But when he was in his early 20s, he was offered that chance, and he said no. And he walked away from a path that was practically paved with gold, as well as ice cream, to, as we jokingly say, follow his own rocky road. And he ended up moving with my mom to a little island off the coast of Canada, where they built a one-room log cabin, grew most of their own food, practiced yoga and meditation for several hours a day, and, of course, named their kid Ocean. And years later, my dad wound up researching the food industry and becoming a best-selling author, writing about food and health. The media called him the rebel without a cone. He had lost his uncle, Bert Baskin, co-founder of the famed ice cream company, to heart disease at the age of 54. So my dad's uncle was one of the great entrepreneurs in American history, but he didn't have his health, and he left his wife a widow and his kids, my dad's cousins, fatherless. Then years later, my own grandpa wound up suffering from serious heart disease, diabetes, weight issues. His doctors told him he didn't have long to live. But as fate would have it, they gave him a copy of my dad's book and suggested he read it. Well, he did. He made major changes. He gave up ice cream. He gave up sugar. He cut way down on his animal product consumption. He ate a lot more whole plant foods, and he got tremendous results. He reversed his diabetes and heart disease symptoms, got off all his medications, lost 30 pounds, and wound up living 19 more vibrant, healthy years. So we've seen in our family the power that food can have to harm or to heal. And I, following kind of in my dad's footsteps, launched a nonprofit when I was 16, mobilizing young people around the world to take action for health and sustainability. We reached leaders in over 65 countries, many hundreds of thousands of people. And as I traveled the globe, I saw that everybody eats and that what we eat is having this huge impact. I saw how the U.S. way of eating is spreading with KFC and McDonald's and Baskin-Robbins spreading around the world. The U.S. way of growing food with pesticides and antibiotics and factory farms and GMOs is also being exported around the world. And in the process, hospitals are filling up, waistlines are expanding, more and more people are getting sick. And, you know, if you eat the standard American diet, you're going to get the standard American diseases. So 7 years ago, I decided to move on from that nonprofit and work with my dad directly. We launched the Food Revolution Network, and the Food Revolution Summit is our signature major annual event. We convene 24 of the top food experts on the planet and ask them, what's really going on with our food? And what can we do to learn from the latest learnings of medical science and put them to action in our lives for our own health and for the health of our world? And so this is the world's largest convergence of food revolutionaries in the world. We're bringing in over 300,000 people this year alone. And our goal is simple. We want everybody who eats to be able to enjoy healthy, ethical, sustainable food.
So you're excluding the breatharians here, I guess. I guess there's
well, some, we think that they are so evolved that they don't need us anymore. But I haven't met a lot of breatharians who have prospered long term.
No, I think it's kind of a losing proposition, so to speak. You know, it's
you know, part of being human is that we need some fuel.
Yeah. Now it's interesting. Go ahead. Tell me more.
If you sure. Have... Well, I just want to add that I think that in this day and age, food is not just a commodity, but it's also a community. It's something that connects us with life and people and the planet itself. And when you bring your food choices into alignment with your values, with what you want for your life and what you want for your world, then your life takes on an integrity and a potency that is profound. So I am interested in helping more and more people to claim the power of food to fuel the health they want, and also to be a stand for the world they want. You know, I don't know anybody who wants to see kids enslaved in the chocolate industry, like 2 million are right now in the Ivory Coast in Ghana. I don't know anybody who wants to see life expectancy for farm workers be 49 years, like it is in the United States, in large part because of all the pesticide exposure on the job and epidemic rates of cancer that ensue. I don't know anyone who wants to see animals tortured in factory farms while we pump them full of antibiotics and hormones that they come back and haunt us with negative health impact. I don't know anyone who wants it to be cheaper to buy Twinkies and you know, McDonald's so-called Happy Meals than to buy carrots and broccoli and kale, which essentially condemns the poor to nutritional disasters. But we have a food system that has normalized something that is toxic and even brutal to many of the poorest segments of our society. And so I'm calling for a food revolution because I want individuals to be free from this madness, and also because I think we care. I think we give a darn about the world around us. And most of us, if given the choice, would rather vote with our food dollars for a system that's going to be less toxic and less poisonous and more healthy for humanity.
Well, you know, that's really, it's so true. You know, I grew up in a housing project in New York, and we ate pretty well. We ate pretty well. Many of my friends still, you know, had families in the South who where they would go and live on a farm for the summer. And, you know, it was easier being poor in the country in those days because at least you had your own fresh food and gardens. Everybody had gardens. But these days, if you're living in urban America, even though there are certain places where urban gardens and so on are being started, it's very challenging, particularly with the price and how cheap these foods are, you know, the fast foods, and school lunches, forget about it. You know, they haven't changed much generally in this country since I was a kid. Now, you're really talking about more consciousness and community around food, and what we've seen over the past bunch of years is that there are actual communities that have grown up around specific types of eating. I remember when I was first exposed to the macrobiotic diet, because of the intensity of preparation and so on, you basically had to live that entire lifestyle. And now there are lifestyles associated with veganism, with the paleo diet, et cetera, et cetera. In looking at the general picture of food in this country, how do you bridge all of these different communities that believe different things about the best diet for them?
Well, I think that we can look at there's an overarching consensus amongst serious researchers and people who are actually looking at the data that we live, number one, in a food culture that's become increasingly toxic. We can all probably agree that kids should learn about nutrition in school and doctors should learn about nutrition in medical school. I think most of us can agree that it would be nice to move towards less processed junk, less added sugars, less pesticides and hormones and antibiotics and factory farms, and towards more real, whole, natural foods. I think that most of us could probably agree that it's better for farmers who grow our food to be paid enough money to feed their own families. And most of us could agree that it's better to invest in a food system where topsoil expands, where water consumption goes down, where nutrient levels go up. A more sustainable system, such as organic methods, tend to support. So, and of course, we all have an investment, I think, in food being affordable and being able to reach the world's poor, and in food systems that help the farmers and farm workers around the planet to earn enough that their whole economy can be sustainable in their communities, so we don't have so many people starving. Ironically, a lot of the people who are starving on the planet right now are growing food. It's just that they can't afford to feed their own families because that food's going to somebody else. So I am interested in all of those topics, and I think that whether you're paleo or vegan or whatever else you might call yourself, we could probably all agree, most of us, that those are good directions to move in. And that's actually quite a lot to agree on. We also want to see more local food. We want to see, you know, less packages and labels and food traveling tens of thousands of miles all over the planet and back and around and back again with 30 ingredients with a bunch of chemical names we can't pronounce. So if we could implement those kinds of changes, we could dramatically shift the health outcomes for many, many millions of people and create a more viable future for humanity. That said, let's talk for a second about the thorny issues, which might be issues like meat and perhaps grains and legumes. Now, when I look at epidemiological studies involving, actually at this point, millions of humans, what people eat in different parts of the world and what kinds of health outcomes they experience over the course of decades, I see consistent trends. We can see that the blue zones, which Dan Buettner identified working for National Geographic, are the places in the world where people have the longest, healthiest lives. he looked at, you know, people in Sardinia, Italy, people in Okinawa, Japan, people in Loma Linda, California, in five different places around the world. And he identified that they all had basically four things in common across all these different regions. They all eat a whole foods and predominantly plant-based diet. Most of them are not vegan, but you know, they get maybe 5 or 10% of their calories from animal products, and in Loma Linda, California, actually zero. And he noted that they all get lots of exercise, and it's built into the fabric of their daily lives. They don't just go to the gym. They like bike and hike and move around a lot daily, and that's kind of something that's built into their lives. They have strong family ties and relationships, and they all have some way of de-stressing or cultivating mindfulness or having a spiritual orientation that gives them a sense of peace and a sense of connection to something greater than themselves. So we could look at that and we could say those are basically the same four pillars that Dr. Dean Ornish identified in the Ornish program, which is the first program that's been proven to not only help prevent but also reverse heart disease. Again, Dr. Ornish says we need to move more, eat better, stress less, and love more. Basically the same stuff. So I think those are some pretty strong points of agreement, and the average American gets about 30% of their calories from animal products, whereas what we're hearing is that in the blue zones it might be 5 or 10%. And my sense is that if somewhere between 0 and 5 or 10% is probably what's most optimal. Now, we could argue till the cows come home, literally, whether it's best to be vegan or not. But at the end of the day, the direction, I think, is clear. We need to eat more whole plant foods, less processed junk, and, yes, less animal products.
Well, we're coming on to a break, Ocean, and we'll be back and we'll talk a little bit more about how the political implications of the food revolution. We're talking with Ocean Robbins about the Food Revolution Summit. Wiki Politiki will be back shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
More people nowadays are choosing natural and organic foods. The problem is, these foods can be hard to find and expensive. Creations Clean Food offers organic, non-GMO foods at wholesale prices, delivered to your doorstep, and free shipping for orders over $50. Come visit us online and take a look. Save time, save money, save your health, save the planet at creationscleanfood.com or find us on the Wiki Politiki sponsor page.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, hi there again. This is Steve Behrman. I'm back with our guest, Ocean Robbins. We're talking about the Food Revolution Summit. We're talking about our desire for clean food, our desire for prosperous farmers, healthy farm workers, and so on. You know, it was shocking to me a couple of weeks ago when I read an article about farmers committing suicide here in the United States, in New England. It had happened in Iowa. We had read about this in the wake of Monsanto's sweep of India a number of years ago. You know, what do you make of all of this? And, well, let's start with that. I know you're familiar with that. Why is it that farmers are committing suicide?
Well, it's really hard to grow food, especially if you aren't a mega agribusiness owner who owns, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of acres and can just sort of outsource the job, because you're subject to cutthroat market prices that fluctuate dramatically, because you're subject to weather impacts and commodities prices and all kinds of factors beyond your control. And quite frankly, at this point in time, the labor pool for our farm operations has become very problematic, because a lot of immigrants are, depending on your preferred term, illegal or undocumented, and are frightened in the current political environment. So a lot of farm owners are having trouble getting the labor that they used to get, because farm workers are no longer wanting to migrate because they're afraid for their safety and they're afraid of, you know, being found. And since a large portion of our farm labor force is undocumented or alien or whatever term you want to use, we have an issue there that is actually a real problem for big agribusiness. But the biggest players are relatively insulated from all those forces because, quite frankly, they've got plenty of money behind them. But a lot of everyday mom-and-pop farmers are struggling to make ends meet. And then add climate change to that and the fact that we have, you know, torrential rains and floods in some places and droughts in others, and that's likely to become more common. And, you know, you've got the makings for a pretty challenging economic environment for people who have to work really hard to grow our food. So I think we all need to respect and love our farmers and appreciate them for the hard work that they do. And what we've got is Monsanto and the agrochemical industry have been promising tremendous positive benefits as people go in the GMO direction. And people sign contracts with them to buy not only their seeds, but also their herbicides. And it's a whole package deal. Sometimes that works out economically for the farmers, but sometimes it doesn't. In India, more than 200,000 farmers have taken their own lives with farmer suicides in the last couple of decades, primarily in the cotton belt, where farmers have gone to grow GMO cotton, and they signed contracts with Monsanto, and then they didn't get the rate of return they expected, and they didn't realize how much money they would have to spend on Roundup as well as the seeds in the contract they had signed, and they wound up losing their farms. And a lot of these farmers have literally been taking their own lives by drinking poisons, pesticides. In the United States, we've got a lot of dairy farmers in the Northeast that have been taking their own lives, or there's certainly a fear of this, because quite frankly, there's been a crash in the dairy milk market. The amount of actual fluid dairy milk consumed in the United States has fallen in half in the last decade and a half, and it's being replaced by soy milk, rice milk, almond milk, hemp milk, you know, et cetera. Flax milk. Every time you go to the store, you'll probably see a new type of milk on the shelves. And so people are drinking less and less dairy milk, and I think there's some good health reasons for that, but obviously it's tough on the farmers who have been dependent on that industry for their income. And a lot of them may need to, you know, find a new line of work, quite frankly, which is, you know, sad for them. But I do appreciate that, you know, we have the opportunity always to, you know, build a new economy that's rooted in healthier food.
You know, what I'm aware of is that more and more and more people everywhere in this country, you know, even places you wouldn't expect, are choosing organic foods. People I know who live in urban areas, you know, will drive out to a farm and pick up raw milk and all kinds of things like that. So the awareness is there. And yet the mainstream seems to be all about Monsanto, GMOs, et cetera, et cetera. and including the mainstream narrative from the New York Times and Washington Post on down. How do you deal with that, you know, when obviously the science is saying that we do a lot better with cleaner food and that the great green revolution that was supposed to bring large crops has really done more to destroy the soil than create prosperity. How, with the food revolution and with your work, how do you deal with that contradiction and disconnect that your narrative is going against the mainstream narrative?
Well, I'm not going to argue that in the short term, pesticides and chemical fertilizers can lead to bigger yields per acre, that the crops will grow faster and there will be less damage to bugs if you put a bunch of chemical fertilizers in the soil and then spray them with poisons that kill the bugs. If you're just looking at those metrics, the green revolution, as we call it, which has been based in these chemicals, has brought us a greater volume of food on planet Earth in the short run. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, it's depleting our topsoil at a terrifying rate. It's made us immensely dependent on agrochemicals, many of them imported based on oil from the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And it's added immeasurably to health problems because we are all contaminating our farms, our fields, our bodies with pesticides that are neurotoxins, that are endocrine disruptors, that are probably carcinogenic. So in the long run, the question becomes, how do we feed a growing human population sustainably? Now, here's the thing, Steve. We do not have a shortage of food on planet Earth. We have a shortage of justice. We actually waste a tremendous amount of food. In the United States, about a third of the food we grow is wasted. People aren't going hungry because there isn't enough food to feed them. They're going hungry because they don't have enough money to buy it. So that's where we say we have a shortage of justice, not a shortage of food. How do we create a more just world? Well, I think it's by investing in healthier economy. And it starts with food. As I said, of the 700 million or so people on the planet who are seriously food insecure right now, most of them are in the agricultural industry. They're involved in growing food directly in their daily lives. And a lot of them are really dirt poor, literally. So my interest is in how we can invest in a healthier food economy if we're serious about wanting a healthier population. But we also have to look at the fact that a huge portion of our food is going to livestock and not to humans. In the United States, the vast majority of our corn, our soy, our other staple crops is being fed to cows, pigs, and chickens. And, you know, it takes about 12 pounds of grain or soy to produce 1 pound of feedlot beef. The other 11 are wasted. They're turned into hoof or hide or bone, or they're burned up as energy, or they're turned into manure, which actually ends up polluting our environment. So if we're serious about feeding a hungry world, we would actually do better to invest in a more sustainable food culture that treats its workers well, that treats the earth well, that invests in deepening our topsoil and saving our water supplies, and feeding less of our precious food to livestock. That's how we're going to have people that can afford healthy food. That's how we're going to have healthy ecosystems. That's how we're going to help stem climate change and be more resilient in the face of droughts and floods. That's how we're going to produce a healthier product that's going to bring down our medical bills and lead to less rates of cancer and illness for humanity by growing healthy, real food and investing in a healthy food economy.
What about the relocalization of food growing? I mean, it seems like this is happening everywhere to a certain extent. How sustainable is it in terms of growing enough food locally so that we're not spending a fortune transporting it across the planet?
Well, local food is a wonderful thing. I mean, when you eat locally grown food, you're supporting local farmers and a local economy. Your food can be much fresher. It doesn't have to be picked green so that it can be schlepped great distances. And there's less waste with local food production. There's nothing inherently economically advantageous about taking Mother Nature's bounty and stripping it of its fiber and minerals, processing it in a plant, combining it with a bunch of other junk from all over the world, throwing it in a package, and then trucking it a few thousand miles. But that's what's normally done, and the irony is that it's often cheaper than eating locally grown vegetables from a farm across the street. This is because we have a kind of perverse economic system that's literally subsidizing junk food and, in a sense, condemning the poor to nutritional disasters. It's like being fined for wearing your seatbelt. You have to pay extra to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And so I want to see that change, and some of it starts with government policy. What's exciting is that more and more people are opening up the market for local food systems and local food cultures. Farmers markets, community-supported agriculture systems, these are exploding. More and more people are caring where their food comes from and, frankly, want to invest in their local economy. When you eat with the seasons, you're more connected to your ecosystem. You're more rooted in it. And I happen to believe that it's possible that, the foods that grow at certain seasons carry certain nutrients that also help human beings to better respond to those seasons. Now, you can have a hard time eating all locally grown if you live in Alaska or Siberia in the wintertime.
It's hard to be a vegan.
Freezers are a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no, there aren't a lot of those. I think freezers are wonderful things, too, though. And I don't mind having some of my food come from other places, but I live in California, so I'm lucky enough that I can eat locally grown food pretty much year-round. We have farmers markets every day of the year in my town, which is a wonderful thing, but not everyone has that. So, you know, find the best happy medium you can, but if you can invest in a local food economy, you're doing a good turn for the nutrients you're going to enjoy, the health and freshness of your food, and also your local community.
Yeah, you know, it's what's interesting, I think, is that there has been so much awareness on the part of people about local food. I see it everywhere that, there are restaurants that specialize in that. So, and there's something else. I read years ago about an economist named Carl Wilken, who was in the 1930s, said that all new wealth comes from the soil. And at that time, in the 30s, the national income was seven times the farm income. It was a multiplier. And so he developed the idea of parity farm prices, not the idea of paying farmers not to grow, but paying farmers a fair price based on what they require to survive. And then instead of a trickle down, you have a bubble up, because this renewable wealth, just, you know, every season there's a yield, and then that gets put into the economy as food, and that just keeps growing. What happened with parity farm prices is that at the end of World War II, with agribusiness, they weren't that interested in that, because they wanted their marketplace was all around the world. They, you know, these were the international Archer Daniels Midland and so on companies. But the idea that food that grows from the ground is actually renewable wealth, and that the farmers are the ones that are cultivating and bringing forth this wealth. We don't really think about it. We think of wealth as gold or currency, but this is literally new wealth that comes from the soil. So perhaps that idea of considering the farmers, the honored people who are at that part of the food chain where they're taking the food, and then, you know, every step along the way, there's jobs and so on, and food being consumable, people are going to eat again tomorrow. You know, so there's a lot to that. Do you see in the 7 years you've been doing the Food Revolution Summit, what kind of progress have you seen in that period of time? What are the markers that you've seen?
Well, on the one hand, GMOs have continued to spread around the world, and for all of the public desire to see GMOs labeled, they still aren't. And we've had the passage of the DARC Act, dubbed the Deny Americans Right to Know Act, a couple years ago, which essentially enshrined that the food industry it's optional for them to label GMOs on the package. But so I consider that and some other steps we've seen a backwards tilt, but a lot of things are moving forward in good ways. McDonald's recently closed 700 restaurants. I think that we see more and more big food companies using organic ingredients, stocking. We see companies like Safeway, Walmart, and Costco stocking organic foods with pride and featuring them. We're seeing more and more access to healthy foods. As I mentioned, a 50% drop in fluid milk consumption, which, while it's rough for the farmers growing milk, also I think represents a growing consumer trend towards recognizing that milk ain't a great health food for most of us, especially if it's, you know, coming from cows that were raised in factory farms. Exactly. We're seeing gestational crates for mother pigs banned in 9 states in this country and in the entire European Union, and increasing numbers of states banning cages and egg production, including our own state of California. We're seeing more and more people interested in local, and farmers markets have quadrupled in the last 15 years. CSAs similarly have quadrupled in the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. Sales of organic food are exploding. Sales of natural food are exploding. So I think that the trend is extremely positive in many ways, because quite frankly, people are sick of being sick. They're fed up with toxic food. They're hungry for a change. I would also add that consumption of sugar is starting to drop somewhat notably, and that sales of Coke and Pepsi and other sugary drinks, which are probably a little bit like the new cigarettes, they are so overwhelmingly indicted by medical science that it's increasingly clear they are drivers of the obesity and diabetes epidemics, and we're starting to see them dropping as well. Schools are starting to ban soft drink sales. More people are investing in drinking fountains. So these are all very positive trends, and I think the trajectory is we're going to see more and more pasture-raised animal products. We're going to see more and more vegans and vegetarians and people who are choosing to avoid animal products altogether. I think that this would be a really bad time to be an investor in the soft drink industry. It's kind of like being an investor in the cigarette industry a generation back. It's a losing proposition. But it's a good time to be invested in a healthier food future, because I think that's where we're headed. I think completely set up with the status quo.
After the break, we'll talk a little bit more about the politics of food and the Food Revolution Summit that's coming up very soon. We're talking with Ocean Robbins on WikiPolitiki.
Free your mind with OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life, I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. We're back with Ocean Robbins talking about the food revolution. One thing that I've been encouraged by, and I hope you'll continue to encourage me, is that uniting around the identical issue of food will help us perhaps reach past some of the partisan and polarizing barriers that we've experienced in the body politic. It seems to be that, in my experience, and certainly our mutual friend Joseph McCormick working in Seattle, found that when progressive Greens and conservative libertarians got together and were able to share ideas with one another, there was mutual education, and many people found that they both were interested in clean food and preserving our personal freedoms while looking out for the collective benefit. How has the food revolution been able to bring together different parties across party lines?
Well, I want to draw a distinction between the people and the elected officials. The elected officials, frankly, of both parties are fairly invested in the status quo. A lot of the financial contributions come from the folks who are profiting from the status quo, and it's very hard to make it through the state of Iowa in caucuses and try to get your party's nomination if you don't support the big agribusiness companies based in Iowa that are essentially rooted in factory farms and high fructose corn syrup and all the other products that are making us sick, because that's a big part of that state's income. So unfortunately, we have a status quo in which most of our elected officials are kind of doing Monsanto's bidding and big agribusiness's bidding rather than looking out for the well-being of the people. However, at a more grassroots level, there is a lot of hope, I feel, from people of all stripes and shades and kinds who care about food and who care about our health. You know, at the end of the day, cancer doesn't care who you voted for. It doesn't even care how much you know about food, but it cares a lot what you eat. And cancer is voting you for you to eat the standard American diet, which, of course, will give you the standard American diseases. But my take is that as human beings, we have a huge investment in getting informed and getting the truth and getting empowered and in saying no to toxic food. And that occurs across all partisan lines. You know, Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Greens, everybody depends on healthy food system in order to have a healthy body. So we find that in our work, we reach people of many different political perspectives and orientations and backgrounds who are united by a common vision. They want health for themselves, and they want a healthy world. And I don't know any Republicans, conservatives, libertarians who desire to be dependent on government or big insurance companies for their health or their lives. I don't know anybody who wants to spend more time in hospitals. I don't know any Democrats or, you know, progressives or Greens who want to be dependent either on those big systems. We all want to feel independent. We all want to be healthy. We all want to be free. We all want a healthy economy and a healthy world. So I think food is one of the forces that can really bring us together around the table. It's a kitchen table issue, so to speak, that really cuts across partisan lines, because we all have a stake here,
or not stake in the ground,
not necessarily the kind you would eat. Yeah. So I think it's powerful. Now, that said, in Washington, D.C., there is a certain partisan divide where I have to be honest that the right-wing political leaders, the senators and members of Congress who identify with the Republican Party, are particularly focused on supporting the industries that are upholding the status quo, not necessarily because they all feel that way deep in their hearts, but because they feel pretty afraid of what would happen to their base if they didn't support the agrochemical status quo. This is true for a lot of the Democrats as well, but there's a little bit more variance on the left. There are a few people who are advocates, for example, for organic agriculture or for, you know, healthier school lunches or for more regulations around pesticide consumption or glyphosate. I'm not aware of any leaders on the right who have really championed those causes in the political space. One is Lisa Murkowski, a senator from Alaska, is passionately opposed to GMO salmon because her state's economy could be so impacted by it. Other than that, there aren't a lot of champions on the right in the political space. But in the human space, there are so many people of all stripes and shapes who care about food and want healthy food systems.
So how can we overgrow the current duopoly where one party might have sold their souls to the devil while the other merely rented theirs? How do we sorry to be so blunt.
I think we overgrow it by creating a new way of living. And food is a great place to do that. You know, you don't have to fight a revolution against the bad guys. You can just stand with the good guys by buying good food. And in the process, you help build a healthy economy. You know, I think that the old systems and paradigms don't need our help, really, to break them down. They're doing quite a fine job of that themselves. You know, anything unsustainable, by definition, will not continue forever. But I think we build the new world as we render the old world obsolete by investing in the world we want. I remember riding a bike. When I first learned to ride a bike, I was about 6 years old, and I saw this pothole in front of me as I'm riding along. And my thought is like, oh, don't hit the pothole, don't hit the pothole. And I'm staring at the pothole, and guess what I drove into? It was the pothole. Because where you focus your attention often becomes stronger and becomes magnified. So I say, rather than putting all of our attention on everything that's wrong in the world, let's focus a lot of our attention on what we want and what's beautiful and healthy. And food is a great place to do that. I mean, you can complain about factory farms and pesticides and Coca-Cola and sugar and processed junk all you want, or you can stock your kitchen with good, healthy, real food and spend that same energy growing food, preparing food, enjoying food that's good for you, so we can love food that loves us back. And that's what I'm interested in.
I like that approach. You know, when I was a kid, one of the jokes that circulated from like the old vaudeville days that my parents remembered, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Doctor says, so don't do this. So, you know, we can, you know, focus on all of the things that aren't working, and there's plenty to do that. We have a president right now that is a magnet for that. But I think there's a certain level of distraction that comes. It really distracts us from focusing on what we really want instead, and we end up pushing against, spending all of our energy pushing against. So in terms of moving forward, what do you find the most heartening and the most encouraging right now?
Oh my goodness! I mean, I'm heartened by all the people who are making choices and making changes. I just spoke with a woman named Kate in Calgary, Alberta, who was 120 pounds overweight, severe diabetes. She went blind. She couldn't walk. She was hooked up to an oxygen tank, that 20-pound oxygen tank, in order to breathe. Doctors told her she probably didn't have a year to live. Her best hope was a lung transplant. She would never see again, and she'd be on insulin injections for the rest of her life, which probably wouldn't be long. She had three young kids. She watched the movie Forks Over Knives, changed her diet, went to a whole foods plant-based diet, taught herself to cook, blind and unable to walk, ate steamed greens with vinegar six times a day, and got incredible results. Within a year, she'd lost 120 pounds. Her eyesight came back.
Wow.
She got her mobility back. She's reversed all of her diabetes symptoms. She doesn't need insulin injections anymore. Because of her previous condition, she has a kidney failure, only 12% kidney function. Doctors expect her to need dialysis, but for 5 years she's been in this state and she hasn't needed dialysis because her body is functioning so cleanly. She said to me, "I'm not rich and I don't expect to be able to leave my kids any great fortune, but I'm leaving them something far better, far more important, which is the gift of health." Her own son saw what happened to her. He was morbidly obese, lost 70 pounds. Her own husband saw what happened to her, joined her in the journey, reversed his own diabetes. These stories are profound. Every time you make a choice and make a change, you send out ripples through your whole family system, through your whole culture, that say that hope is possible. And any time I'm feeling down or self-piteous, I think about Kate, blind, unable to walk, hooked up to an oxygen tank, eating steamed greens 6 times a day, teaching yourself to cook, and I realize what courage is possible in human beings. And it puts all my problems in perspective. And I realize that we can always make a change and reap the benefits, no matter how bad things may have gotten.
You know, we've been so, those of us who grew up in the progressive tribe are so used to the idea that collectively we make these changes, we create legislation. And yet, ultimately, all of this comes down to individual choice. She had the choice. She could have continued down the path that she was on. Something made her change. And when we see an individual change, other individuals can make the change. You know, collectively, we're a bunch of individuals. And certainly, it's easier to do what everybody else is doing. However, the real stories, the stories that stand out, are about people like her who took the coaching, who decided to find the coaching and make another choice. So that is very heartening. What else? Anything else that you find this is showing that we're moving in the right direction collectively?
Well, I'm going to tell you another story about a person I just talked to recently. His name is Craig Watts. He was a factory farm operator in North Carolina. He had hundreds of thousands of chickens. He worked for Purdue. He ran a farm with their birds. They provided the feed. They provided the technical support and the mentorship. They bought all the birds from him after they were fattened up. They forbid him from ever opening a window or giving the chickens light. They lived in a pile of manure that was several years old. The barns were cleaned every few years. They couldn't move. They got so fat because they were morbidly obese that they would literally be unable to walk. And they would just lie in a pile of manure. The average bird had less than 1 square foot. And this was their lives until they were murdered. Craig saw an ad for Purdue Farms chicken on TV saying how happy and healthy the chickens were. And he said, "That's a bunch of BS. I'm not going to stand for it." So he wound up inviting an animal rights organization to come in and film his farm and see how a certified, humane chicken farmer really did things. And he was following all Purdue's advice. He was doing everything they wanted. So the video went viral. Millions of people saw it. Purdue, of course, tried to blame it all on him and say he was doing things wrong, but they had a hard time pulling that off because they'd been giving him grade A ratings for years every week when they visited his farm. So now Craig decided to get out of the chicken industry. He's growing crops on his land, and he has become a consultant, helping factory farmers to transition to sustainable agricultural methods. He's also helped to share the truth with millions and millions of people. He's a hero to me, honestly. Guy who had that much invested, he spent decades factory farming chickens. And he said enough is enough. He turned his life around, he told the truth, and now he's helping people to make a change.
Wow, those are two amazing stories, something that really impacts the individual in their own health and something that inspires other people to make the change collectively. Let's talk just a little bit in the last 2 minutes we have left. The Food Revolution Summit that's coming up, if it's Food Revolution, what's the website? You can find it, of course.
Well, you can go to foodrevolutionsummit.org to sign up for free. We're interviewing 24 of the world's top food experts about healthy, ethical, sustainable food. We're going to broadcast 3 more interviews every day, 8, 9, and 10 a.m. Pacific time, and then share these on 24-hour replay. So you can sign up and join in for free and catch it all. My dad, John Robbins, is conducting the interviews. I'm hosting them. I'll be on after every interview to answer live questions and engage with our community and give away prizes. It's an incredible event. We're expecting 300,000 participants. And it's all completely free because we are passionate about getting this message out to the world.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, it is really amazing how much good information is available to people. And, you know, it always works better when people are doing these things in concert with other folks. You mentioned community right at the beginning. And, you know, in a certain regard, the Food Revolution Network is a non-local community of people who care about food, seems to me.
Well, it's true. And I think that, you know, food is a global interaction. Tweet connects you to farmers, policies, and practices all over the world, but it's also so personal. What you eat literally becomes you. And so I think it's time that we took our food and our health into our own hands. And instead of outsourcing our food choices to agrochemical companies and marketers, we decided to claim our God-given right to the health we deserve by giving our bodies the food that they need to thrive.
Well, we've been talking with Ocean Robbins about the Food Revolution Summit and about how we can overgrow the current chemical system by making our own personal food choices and communicating with other people. Food Revolution Summit, you can find the link, direct link, at the Wiki Politiki page on OM Times Radio. This is Steve Behrman. Thank you, Ocean Robbins, for being our guest. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.